It's Life and Taxes with Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins joining us this afternoon. As always, we're looking at tax season, so I'm sure that's possibly the topic of discussion. We'll find out as we welcome Andrew Foster again of Harvell and Collins. And I do want to remind you that number, as you are listening to the program, 252 area code 726-9050. Andrew, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
So we're right here on top of tax season. You know, I'm assuming you're getting a lot of calls on that or some concerns?
Yeah, Lockwood, whenever we get close to the tax deadline, you know, your inbox tends to fill up a little bit more. As you know, at Harvell and Collins, we do a lot of estate administration, a lot of trust administration. And so, therefore, you know, we're concerned about those deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, filing those last tax returns for individuals who have unfortunately left us in 2022, making sure that we're filing the appropriate estate income tax returns or trust income tax returns, same deadline, that being, you know, in this year it's April 18th, surprisingly mm-hmm. enough. You know, we talked about that a few shows ago, about the fact that usually tax day, as we know, is April 15th, but because April 15th falls on a Saturday,
right,
and because there's a holiday in
Washington,
the District of Columbia,
yeah.
District of Columbia on Monday, that means that we're set up for an April 18th tax deadline this year. So clearly it's important, Lockwood, because we know how important those deadlines are,
mm-hmm.
because if you fail to meet those deadlines, there are penalties that ensue.
Right. So let's talk about this. If in fact you do fail to meet the deadline, is there corrective action that can be taken?
Yeah, so if you know, clearly right now, if you're sitting here listening to this, you need to be thinking, if you haven't started your taxes,
mm-hmm.
you know, number one, can I rush and get them done? And there's always some danger doing that, you know, because you want to make sure that you have all your information and that you key the information in correctly,
mm-hmm.
And that you're filing an accurate tax return. You do sign that under the penalties of perjury. So, you know, don't rush it because there's an extension that you can file. Now, bear in mind, that's an extension to file, not an extension to pay. So you need to bear in mind that if you file that IRS Form 4868, which is the form that's required, it will give you an extra 6 months to get that filing made, so no harm, no foul there. But historically, Lockwood, if you owe taxes, you need to make sure that you make that payment, that best guess payment, you know, by April 18th, so that you aren't going to ensue any failure to pay penalty associated with that. If, on the other hand, if you can't get that return filed, you don't make that extension, and you're out there going, uh-oh, deadline's come and gone, I've missed it, Andrew, then the answer there is file as soon as possible.
Right.
Because what happens, Lockwood, on this failure to file penalty is, if you're 1 day late, you're a month late.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to make sure you get that filing made so you don't go into the next month because, you know, that 5% interest that can rack up on you is a product of those monthly deadlines. So if you're 1 day late, you're a month late. But if you're a month and 1 day late, you're 2 months late.
Right.
So you just want to make sure that you're getting that return filed as quickly as possible. The other thing is, if you get a refund, Lockwood,
mm-hmm.
this is important. If you're due a refund, then no harm, no foul again, because the penalty system for tax returns is based upon the amount that you actually owe.
Okay.
So I mentioned 5%. Well, it's 5% of the tax that's due that you haven't paid yet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're getting a refund and you don't have any taxes that are due and you miss the deadline, well, go ahead and make that filing because you know you're not going to get dinged for failure for late filing. You're not going to get dinged for failure to pay because you've already paid your taxes either through withholding or estimated taxes or by some other means. So just, you know, if you historically get a refund and you happen to miss the deadline because it just kind of snuck up on you for whatever reason, go ahead and get that return filed. Go ahead and get that refund so, you know, you can take the money back from the government and do what you need to do with it.
Right.
So Very important there. One thing I will mention as well is we're up on a deadline for refunds for 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So for example, your 2019 tax return, which was due in 2020, that will become a closed tax year on April 15th, ironically, because that was the deadline for that particular year for 2019. So, you know, bear in mind that if you're out there and you're seriously delinquent and hadn't made your 2019 filing, but you think, hey, Andrew, I always get a refund every year. I hadn't filed, you know, just because I didn't get around to it. If you fail to file, Lockwood, by that April 15th deadline for that 2019 return, well, you just made a gift to the government.
Wow.
The best you can do at that point is file and basically call it a break even. Because even if the government owes you money, they're not going to pay it to you because you didn't meet the statutory deadline to make sure you get that file within 3 years of the return due date.
All right. That's interesting. Now, you, of course, mentioned the fact that there's a three-year statute of limitations for a refund from the federal government. But what about statute of limitations for failure to pay? If, for example, I actually had an amount due and I discover this from review of my 2019 taxes, and this is probably an outrageous question and probably has never happened, but is there a statute of limitations on the part of the payer?
Yeah, good question. So statute of limitations relative to that, so as far as collection goes for mm-hmm. the IRS, if you owe the money, and it's really a 10-year statute of limitations on collection.
Okay.
So the IRS has 10 years to collect that debt against you. In Lockwood, it's 10 years from the date of the assessment. So, you know, that can be tricky sometimes because the normal way that you're assessed is we're a self-reporting tax system.
Uh-huh.
We file our taxes. And by filing your taxes, you're saying, you know, IRS, I owe X amount. And the minute that you file that return and it shows an amount due, then that has been assessed against you.
Okay.
There's other ways to get assessed, though. You can unfortunately draw the bad card uh-huh. and end up in an audit situation, and they adjust your return in some manner. So that would be the date that adjustment actually takes place, and it becomes final. That would be the date of the assessment there, and they'd have 10 years from that date to collect against it.
Okay.
So, of course, you could imagine, Lockwood, 3 years to get your refund. If you fail to do it, it's a gift of the government.
Right.
But the government's got 10 years to collect against you. So you can imagine that when you write the rules, those are the kind of rules that you get.
Wait a second. What about equity here? What about equity? All right. We're talking with Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins, Life and Taxes. And the really important part today and this conversation is taxes. One quick question for you, Andrew. And, of course, by the way, let me just say that, remind you the number, 252 area code 726-9050. Or go online to harvellandcollins.com. Harvell and, spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. Andrew, the other question, of course, to the filing, and that is meeting the deadline. Obviously, many of us are doing it by mail. Now, if you can do it by the internet, and I'm thinking that if you're doing it electronically, there's a stamp that is associated with that filing, an electronic stamp. So if I file up until midnight, when Mickey's arms go straight up to 12, there's probably a way to identify when I sent that filing. But if I'm doing it by paper, should we do it by registered mail?
Certainly. Yeah, that's definitely the way to go, Lockwood, because we've talked many a time on this program about being able to prove
mm-hmm.
the date and time that you send something to the IRS, because you remember those during COVID, still a problem, but not nearly the problem that it was a couple of years ago. The backlog,
mm-hmm.
the stacks of mail, the unopened mail at the IRS. You know, it's so imperative for you to be able to prove I sent it to you, and here's my, you know,
proof. Yeah,
registered mail proof. You know, you got it at X date on X time, and that's a fact.
Okay.
So So if you do the old-fashioned way, if you're going to mail that return in, it's got to be by midnight, you know, as you said, on April 18th, and it needs to be done in a manner with which you can prove.
All right.
Just as you get your digital receipt from your e-file, you need a receipt from the post office showing that that is going to be mailed, postmarked on the deadline date. And remember, mailing's filing. That's why we have until April 18th to actually get that document in the mail, that return in the mail to the IRS, and is deemed filed on that particular day, regardless of when they actually receive it.
Well, now, of course, I just want to make mention of this. The only place where this holiday is, respected or celebrated is Washington, D.C. It's Emancipation Day, and as a result, Monday the 17th, you can still, unless I'm mistaken, the post office will be operating, will it not?
That's right.
Okay, so Monday is a good day to be there in the post office, not wait till Tuesday and stand in a long line potentially to get your paper filing done. Andrew, before we wrap it up, I have a quick question on the electronic filing. Obviously, I mentioned a moment ago there's a timestamp of some nature. Is there a kind of a record that's sent back to the filer that this has been received, that sort of thing? Because I do worry about the things of hacking and sometimes electronic records go off into the ethosphere. So I'm wondering, should we look for something that confirms receipt of our filing?
Certainly, Lockwood. You will receive a notice from the NCDOR as well as the IRS that your return has been accepted. So you'll get the original. Once you've hit send on the e-file, you'll get confirmation that that has been done.
Right.
And then you know, possibly as early as the same day, you may get a notice from the IRS or the NCDOR that return has been accepted. So you get kind of instantaneous action, very short order on e-filing. And you know, if you're out there and you're wanting your refund, I do encourage you to e-file, because the return's going to get approved and accepted very quickly. And then that check or the direct deposit can hit your bank very quickly thereafter, you know, averaging within a 3-week turnaround to get your refund by the IRS. So certainly encourage e-filing if you want to get that refund to you as quickly as possible.
We're talking with Andrew Foster here on Life and Taxes. Appreciate his time. And again, that number, 252 area code 726-9050. If you find yourself in a bind with taxes, you might it would be worthwhile, Andrew, to at least reach out and make a contact with you, someone on staff, just to, for at nothing, if at the very least, just some quick guidance. Don't ignore this, is in other words, final conclusion.
That's right, Lockwood. Available. Like you said, 252-726-9050, harvellandcollins.com. Email is afoster@harvellandcollins.com.
afoster@harvellandcollins.com. And again, remind you, spell out the word and, Harvell and, A-N-D, Collins.com. As always, Andrew, thanks for taking the time to be with us. And that, sir, is...